Welcome to the Untangling Web3 podcast. So sports has always been about passion, loyalty, and community. So it's no surprise that Web3 is making waves in the space. From digital collectibles to fan-owned teams, the line between the pitch and the blockchain is getting thinner. But are these innovations actually delivering value or just hype? Today's guest is right in the middle of it. We're joined by Tom Fleetham, a leader at the intersection of Web3 and sports, who's worked with major teams, brands, and startups to launch real-world products fans actually care about. From loyalty programs and gamified experiences to next-gen fan engagement, Tom helps shape the future of what sports look like, on and off the field. We're diving into what's working, what's not, and where the real opportunities lie for teams, fans, and builders. Without further ado, Tom, welcome to Untangling Web3.
Hey, Alec. How you doing? Hey, Jack.
Very excited to have you on. Like, we've been trying to put this one, well, it's been in the works for a while now. You've got a busy schedule. And I think, like, the reason that we're both so excited to talk about this stuff is because a lot of the characteristics that are typically kind of associated with Web3 are around community building, loyalty, you know, peer-to-peer interaction. And apart from gaming, the big other sector that fits into that is sports. So we've been really excited to talk to someone in the space about Web3 and sports. And that's why we've got you on and very excited to have you here.
Awesome. Yeah, excited to be here. Sorry it took so long to arrange. I'm not usually that much of a diva, but yeah, glad that we made it happen. And yeah, like sports, the way I look at sports, or one of the ways I look at it, and Web3, is top down versus bottom up. And in terms of like brand value and that top down opportunity for growth, it doesn't get much bigger than major sports rights holders. But that doesn't necessarily always like mesh that well with kind of bottom up organically grown communities. And yeah, I'm sure we'll get into some of that today.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Tom. And I guess we should also start by the podcast by saying congratulations. I believe you're a Spurs fan, so you must be pretty happy at the minute with how the end of your season's gone. But I think, you know, maybe football is a good place to start this episode as well, because, yeah, as you said, I think football teams are some of the biggest brands in the world, full stop, you know, not just in sports. But yeah, they also have a very loyal fan base that don't necessarily like you kind of messing with, you know, how things are done, right? As we saw with things like the European Super Competition, right, a couple of years ago. So yeah, why don't we just start with kind of, can you give us a kind of background on the sports industry today? Like, what does it look like in terms of fan engagement, loyalty, and how those brands actually monetize that brand and their following?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, we could do a whole podcast on that, but at high level, on the surface, everything is really good in sport. So media rights are basically at an all-time high. They're booming. You're still seeing kind of record deals in that space. Sponsorship fees are also pretty much at all-time highs. You're still seeing fairly large deals being signed. And those typically are the two biggest drivers of revenue for most sports organizations. Then, of course, there's also tickets and the money that you make from the actual live experience. And I think most people were sort of unsure about how the digital kind of explosion and the way that our lives have become so much more digital over time, what's that going to do to sport? Well, actually, what it seems to be doing is making those in-person live experiences actually become more valuable. And that's certainly reflected in the prices of tickets for concerts and football matches and all sorts of other live experiences. And then kind of thirdly, sport is also the only content that we watch that we don't time shift. So basic, and that's just hugely valuable for advertisers, right? Everything else we watch on catch up, we watch it when we feel like it. And we do that as well with sport, but sport is the only thing where we all congregate around a live event and everybody's online at the same time talking about it. And so on the surface, everything's absolutely wonderful and numbers are booming.
But then I assume like there must be some crack showing, right? There must be some. I've seen like that. You said the numbers right now are huge. It's like the global sports market is like 500 billion or something like that. But I've also seen, you know, some people saying that that growth is slowing relative to maybe other outlets. And maybe a reason to do with like that on that point is around, say, younger generations coming up and having a different idea of what entertainment is, maybe a shorter attention span. You see like Gen Z or whatever gen it is now with 6 second attention spans on Instagram. How does this all fit into, you know, some of the potential issues and opportunities that there is in this very traditional market, I'd say?
Yeah, so I've worked in sport for about 8 years now, three of those in Web3. And there's some trends that are quite well established now that are still kind of in the background, but they're definitely causing some real concerns for the people that run sports organizations, even if they haven't yet kind of hit the bottom line. So one that you've already touched on, rapid changes in the way that people are consuming content, right? So I'm a Spurs fan, very happy Spurs fan at the moment, mainly because my dad was a Spurs fan, right? And I also watched lots of cricket and snooker and rugby when I was growing up because we had five TV channels and there wasn't anything else on that I was interested in, right? And I've got two boys. There's no real guarantees that they're going to be Spurs fans. There's no real guarantee that they're going to be sports fans, despite my best efforts. Like, they won't organically discover snooker. I'm going to have to shove that down their throat if I want them to be interested in snooker, right? Because there's so many other things distracting their attention, whether it's Minecraft or Fortnite or God knows what they're watching on YouTube or whatever it is. Okay, so that's starting to have an influence. And I think football specifically does a great job of cutting through, whether it's through FIFA or EAFC now, and like collectibles and like big events like the World Cup or whatever. Like, it still kind of has a lot of attention on the playground, but I think other sports are certainly starting to struggle. And also what you're seeing, if you combine that with what I mentioned earlier about ticket prices increasing, that's resulting in an aging fan base in terms of the match going population. So the last time I checked, which was a year or two ago, the average age of a season ticket holder in the Premier League was 42 and increasing quite rapidly by about a year every two or three seasons. And you don't have to stretch that out too far before you've actually got like a weirdly old population in the ground that aren't actually making a huge amount of noise anymore. And it could be a very different atmosphere, right? And so does that continue to last forever or not? Don't know. Also, some people are speculating that broadcast revenues have potentially peaked. The NBA signed a really, really long deal recently, which was like a record broadcasting deal. But that's seen as like it was like a 10-year deal or something. And some people seeing that as a sign of, oh, okay, well, if the future was going to be so great, why would you do that? There's also, I think it was Ligue 1 struggled to sell their TV rights recently and had to do like quite a cut down last minute deal in order to shift them. So you're sort of starting to see some cracks on the broadcast side. Then you've also got other things like regulation on betting is increasing. And that's actually taking away some of the sponsorship revenues that rights holders would traditionally be able to go to. Okay. And it's not really clear where that sort of next big set of sponsors is going to come from. Like, some people have speculated that will it be like the Netflixes, the Googles, the kind of tech companies?
Crypto sponsorship like absolutely everywhere right now. Like, so many of the major sports brands have like some affiliation with crypto. Like, you see it absolutely everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think certainly some rights holders sort of see crypto as a potential replacement for some of that betting revenue that they're losing. But yeah, they're desperate to find new verticals to go after because a lot of them are kind of saturated or, yeah, regulation is kind of holding back what they're allowed to do. And then finally, I think, so I've worked with rights holders for a long time, and one thing that has been really consistent is that the way they're structured is that the power all revolves around the sponsorship sales team. They'll call themselves the partnership team, but that's what they are, the sponsorship sales team. And they're not techies, they're not like Web3, not even digital natives necessarily, let alone Web3 natives. Then and they don't tend to think long-term. They don't tend to think in terms of ecosystems or community or in terms of fan engagement. They're just after the money. And that, I think, traditionally has really held back innovation in sport. So, yeah, sorry, that was a long answer. But, yeah, there's loads of stuff that is causing some concern across the industry.
No, that's really interesting. I think, yeah, you've covered a lot of the big kind of major points, I think, there. Because, like, yeah, it seems like we're entering an age now where, as you said, there's just so much more competition for our attention, right? So, yeah, how does sports and the brands and clubs within them maintain, you know, their viewership, maintain the attention and the eyeballs they have on them and their connection with the fans? And I guess, yeah, a lot of the sports teams have this weird thing where that you have like long existing, long lasting loyalty that goes down the generations, as you said, to our children and from our parents. But then you have this tension between the love for a club, I guess, and then the club trying to monetize that. Because when you talk about the size of some of these followings, right, we're talking, you know, some of the biggest football clubs are, you know, hundreds of millions at least across the globe, right? And they are increasingly global. Like if you look at how big the Liverpool fan base has got recently with Mo Salah and stuff across the world now, they're huge. But I guess, is that a challenge then for the brands and the sports clubs to say, well, we have all these people who love us and who want to support us. How do we maximize the revenue we get from that to actually continue? And I guess what you're saying is that, yeah, you have these existing revenue streams. These have been around for, you know, as long as the sport's been around pretty much or has been televised, but now that's kind of running out. Is that fair? That's the kind of the crux of the issue we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you touched on an important point there where like 99% of the fans of most Premier League football teams certainly won't ever actually set foot in the stadium to watch them play. And to be blunt, also won't spend any money that the rights holder ever receives, right? If they buy a shirt, it's probably going to be some replica shirt that doesn't generate any money. There's nothing else really for them to buy. Some of them do like an international membership, which gets you like a digital program or like a God knows what else, but it's not like particularly compelling. So yeah, that's a long-term problem as well, particularly for the major Premier League clubs. And I think to your point about connection, it's like, I just don't think sports does community that well. Like the, particularly like big, once money gets involved, the connection with the fan really can get lost. And I think all rights holders need to really think seriously about how they're going to maintain that connection forward for future generations if they really want to continue to grow and be successful.
It's really interesting. Like, I hadn't thought too much about the idea of the aging average population of, say, Premier League teams. And so that's obviously a really difficult problem to overcome. If your average base is getting older and older and you're losing that tech-savvy younger generation, it's quite risky, right, to try and say, okay, well, let's pivot away from the older generations towards these younger generations. Because if it doesn't go well, you obviously alienate the old generations as well, potentially. So you've obviously been in, you know, sports for a while and specifically Web3 for a while. I'm hoping a lot of these problems you're highlighting, the Web2 style of things, can potentially be solved with a Web3 mindset. Could you talk a little bit about how Web3 fits into some of these problems?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so far, sports and Web3, it started off in a very exciting way, really, with NBA Top Shot, which is the first sort of prominent Web3 sports project that most people have heard of. And that was executed really well and was probably one of the best NFT projects, full stop, like in terms of the way it delivered the very kind of Web2 friendly, like style experience, like user experience, especially for the time when actually it was really hard to do that with the tech, and it did really well. But since then, a lot of the execution has been really poor. There's been a lot of NFT projects that, like the NFTs themselves, they just aren't like beautiful, well executed pieces of art or content that you would want to own. They're sort of cobbled together, and they also have no utility. And I think that's given kind of Web3 sport a bit of a bad name, as well as some other stuff around fan tokens that we'll get into. But where, in terms of the opportunities for Web3 and sport, I think they're enormous. I think the real potential is around tokenization. If you can tokenize things like club ownership, can you give fans real governance rights around how clubs are run? These things are hard to imagine now if you think through the lens of a Premier League club, but that doesn't necessarily have to be where it starts. There's lots of rights holders out there at different levels across lots of different sports. And I think those that give fans power through tokenization and the tokenized governance will start to see the rewards of that. Tokenizing player ownership. Every fan can become a scout, right? Like everyone loves it when they see like a great young player coming through in their U team or something. Can I buy a piece of that action somehow and benefit from that player going on and having an amazing career? Engaging and monetizing those international audiences with digital assets. Suddenly you've got something digital that you can go and sell to your Danish Liverpool fan or Korean Tottenham fan or whatever it is. It's got to be executed well. It needs to be beautiful. It needs to have utility, but suddenly you've got something to sell them. Like, that's a complete no-brainer. I could go on, but I think probably just to finish, fantasy and gaming as well. Obvious areas where if you can tokenize those, reward fans in different ways, have it as like an ecosystem play where it leads to other things. I think there's just tons of opportunity.
It's interesting. So many things that I want to like double click on there. The first one around like giving governance rights and ownership rights to fans is obviously quite powerful, but to what extent, how do you think that would actually work in practice? Like the idea of, say, your 10,000 most loyal fans buying a piece of Manchester United, and then do you actually imagine they would then get a say on who they're buying as players or who gets to play that game? I imagine, like, say, the old school Web 2 style management system would be like, that is terrifying. Like, what do these 10,000 fans necessarily know about operating a stadium or operating a team? That's quite like a roll of the dice, right? Have you seen any of these? Do you have any ideas about how that would work in practice? Have you seen any things like this in practice?
Yeah, so that's where people jump to, and it is hard to imagine, especially with the likes of Man United. But first of all, I'd separate the two things. So firstly, there's tokenized ownership. Like, I'm pretty hardcore kind of crypto person that thinks everything's going to be tokenized eventually and everything's going to be on chain. And there's no reason why shares in my favorite club shouldn't be on chain. And then I should be able to benefit from the business performance of the club. Forget about their on the pitch performance, because that's subtly different. But if they're just like buying a share in a company, there's no reason why that can't be on chain, but it could be delivered in an exciting way for fans all around the world. I think that's a great idea. In terms of the governance stuff, you're right, that's way harder. No manager wants to be dictated to in terms of like what players they're going to sign, what formation they're going to play, stuff like that. That feels impossible, but we did it. So we did a Web3 horse racing project called the Winner's Circle with a rights holder called Racing League. And that's actually, it's a team-based horse racing competition that runs through the summer. Mm. And the teams have managers, and the managers have to pick what horses they're going to run in upcoming races. And there was one manager in particular who completely embraced this, the manager of Team Ireland. And every week he was putting a vote out of like, okay, which horse should I put in this race? Like this one or this one? And then fans were using tokens to vote on the result, right? So you will, like, there's lots of different sports and lots of different levels, and it doesn't have to start at Man United in the Premier League. It can start much lower, and then people can see the benefits, and then it can evolve, right?
How did that out of interest, how did that guy do performance rise, the guy from Ireland that got everyone to vote on the horse?
Very well, yeah. Oh, really? No, not works anyway, like well enough. it was good. And this is the thing, right? Like you might start getting some wisdom of the crowd stuff where you start seeing better results from it. Obviously, sometimes you probably won't. But yeah. Once someone's done it once, the fear factor is likely to go away and there'll be more experiments. And I think, you know, it's early days with this stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting when you start talking about governance and I'm thinking, well, actually, maybe Man United would turn to a DAO at this point. Like maybe that's the best way forward.
Not going anywhere.
No, exactly. I mean, like something's got to change at some point, and then at least you won't have a manager getting embarrassed every 2 years. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to, you know, yeah, to separate the kind of fan ownership part and the governance part, because I think there's a case to be made for the fan ownership part being a first step in improving that kind of community side of things, right? Because maybe, you know, you're not necessarily voting on which players are going to play in the game on Saturday, but you can start having a say in other stuff, have a say in how the experience is kind of crafted around you as someone who, you know, can't visit the stadium, but maybe you want to feel engaged in other decisions that are being made that aren't like critical to the playing of the game. I also saw, Tom, that you said online that you bought a chunk of the Spurs pitch. I think that's right. Can you, as someone who obviously is like both a fan and a kind of expert and professional in the Web3 space in that case, can you just talk us through like what was that? What does it mean to buy a piece of the Spurs pitch and kind of any learnings from that, like good or bad, about how they executed that? I think that's quite an interesting one to learn from.
Yeah, so that's an interesting project called FanBlock that's I think only live with AC Milan and Tottenham at the moment, but they're I know the founder and I think they're looking to expand to other rights holders. Basically the concept is that you buy a pack of within that pack are blocks of the pitch, and then when games happen, if there's any action that happens on your patch of the pitch, then you get points which can then be like converted into rewards. You can also trade your blocks on a marketplace. That's the basic concept. And what I loved about it was the idea that, okay, it gives me something else to look out for when I'm watching a match, in the same way that fantasy football does, right? Right, I own a piece of the pitch, that's cool. And like, that's my patch of the pitch down by the corner flag. Oh yeah, there was a corner and we scored, so that means that's an assist, I'm going to get points, whatever it was. In reality, there were too many blocks, so I never really knew when people were on my...
A single blade.
Patch or not. Yeah, exactly. So maybe it could have been executed slightly differently, but I liked the concept of that, and I think it's an interesting idea, more in the kind of fantasy sports gaming area, and yeah, it's an interesting concept.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions like recycling at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at VBetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show.
I've seen, I think some of the earliest versions I saw of that was like, not archaeological sites, but historical sites like churches, cathedrals. And it was a way of raising money. They would sell a part of like, I don't know, the Sistine Chapel or something like this, just to raise money initially and create that community engagement. I think some of the utility you got, I think you did like, you got a bit of governance so you could work out how often the cathedral was closed or something like this. You could get like a dedicated day a year for you and private fans or whatever. So imagine like they've taken a little bit of interest from that, but it does sound quite interesting. I wonder like how those kind of things will go. Cause it seems like kind of, to me, that kind of project sounds like you're initially getting a lot of engagement and people are paying for that engagement, and then they feel attached to the project, which is great. And then I wonder, like, what happens after that? Like, does that kind of project have the legs to stay? What happens in 10 years time? Are people still competing for that patch of turf? Like, you kind of need to constantly gamify and upgrade these things to keep people interested, right? And do you, like, how would you imagine something like that adding value, like, down the line?
Yeah, I think you've got to sort of apply more kind of ownership to it. You want to really feel like that's your patch of ground. So it's about how you bring that to life. You can do that digitally in obvious ways, like by showing highlights that specifically happened on your patch or something like that. I remember when Tottenham moved into their new stadium, they sent every member a little piece of grass in or a little bit of mud or whatever in like a little, I've got it somewhere, I don't know where I should fish that out, so in like a little plastic bottle, say like, right, you own a piece of the old White Hart Lane. Whereas in reality, I think they probably tear up the pitch every season and completely relay it and start again. So I'd probably look to like send out a little physical piece of pitch as well to be like, right, this is your patch of grass, or this is a bit of mud from your patch of grass, stuff like that. Like, but sort of, that's a bit of a quirky idea, but you know, like you want to truly make Web3 is about ownership. You need to make people feel that they truly own something, and that thing has at least medium-term value, like long-term maybe not, but medium-term value. So yes, this is going to be worth something next season. And actually that gets into another point, which is a problem with sport. They're used to selling you a new kit every season. They're used to selling you a new membership every season, a new season ticket every season. They're used to selling you a new hot dog every match you go to. They're not used to this kind of concept of stuff being permanent on the blockchain, true ownership of something that's scarce, that has long term. And I think you see that show up time and time again in the execution of the models. I remember hearing a horror story, I won't name the club, but one of the clubs that launched a fan token with Socios, like got the money from the initial token launch, did it all, like everything went okay. Then like 6 months later, like, right, when are we planning this year, next season's like token launch? And they were just expecting to just keep launching tokens indefinitely. And you just think, oh my God.
Yeah. The idea is right. That's such a good point, because I don't think that just applies to sports. I think it applies to like so many Web3 and crypto projects, where it's like, rather than like, it's basically about raising money. They do a project, they sell lots of NFTs, and then rather than like maintaining those strong connections, their initial base, they're like, how do we spin up more money 6 months down the line? And then they scrap the first base, and obviously they're the primary market and they've been burned. They're not going to do it again. Like, it's such an important thing to kind of think about Web3. It's not just about making quick money, it's about building long-term connections and communities.
Yeah, no, that's true. And but then actually, to be fair to rights holders and to flip that on its head, it's also been a problem with like successful NFT projects or unsuccessful NFT projects, right? They raise a lot of money at the beginning, and then it's like, oh, where does the, like, and then they end up launching a token, or they end up launching like a second kind of collection that's slightly cheaper or whatever it is. But yeah, so to be fair, it's not like, I feel like I'm being a bit critical of rights holders here, but actually like, it's not like Web3 business models are completely, like perfected and we all completely know what we're doing either.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say this kind of the difference between permanence, because it's like you have this very inverted relationship in sports, right? You have a passion from the fan side, which is pretty permanent, right? It's hard to do anything to stop someone being a lifelong fan of a club. Like, I grew up as a Cardiff fan, you know, no amount of bad performances will ever kind of drill that out of me, unfortunately. But, you know, you have the opposite thing the other way, right? So that the clubs don't have this concept of providing a permanent level of value. Things can fluctuate. And when it comes to these kind of token launches, it seems like they've had that same experience. But it seems like a natural thing, right? It seems like a natural anchor point to say, okay, we'll give you some ownership. Mm. This is our hook for you into a better relationship. But those clubs kind of haven't figured out, okay, once they bought a token, once they're in our ecosystem, how do we make the most of that? Because I actually remember hearing maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and maybe it was like a West Ham or something. They were trying to build like this full ecosystem, I think, based around tokens, right? So like having a currency you could spend when you're out of the ground on online things, kind of digital experiences that are linked. So and when I heard about that, I thought, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then, yeah, over the last few years, all we've seen pretty much is all these fan tokens getting launched with various different models. So, yeah, what would you say is kind of the most promising avenues that you're seeing at the minute, like from real world examples? Like, who do you think's got it right and why, and what can we learn from them?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point around the permanence of your fandom. It's like you supporting your team is sort of permanent and immutable, and it's sort of in a similar way to assets on the blockchain. So there must be something in that if you can kind of get it right, and that's not the case with other brands. You might like say you've bought lots of Nike trainers in your life. That doesn't mean you won't go and buy a pair of Adidas trainers, right?
Exactly.
Some people may be, but very few. Most people aren't that bothered, right? But that same can't be said for sports. So yeah, there has to be something there. But anyway, so there's been tons of experiments so far. I think the main ones, you've got Socios, NBA Top Shot, So Rare, probably NFL Rivals, I'd say are the four that really stand out as like they've achieved something significant. There's obviously more. That's maybe a bit unfair to some that I've forgotten. So apologies if I've forgotten any. But I think Socios have obviously really run with the fan token thing. They've done a great job of onboarding tons of rights holders. And they've got a bit of a critical mass of rights holders at this point, lots of big brands. I think people are very critical of Socios and fan tokens because they say the tokens have no real utility and it's just a cash grab. But I actually have a lot of sympathy with them because I think a lot of that falls down to the right holders of not really understanding what a fan token is, its potential, and not actually being willing to hand over any kind of governance or real utility to the fans. And I think if you look at the examples of fan tokens with Socios where clubs have embraced it a bit more, I think Juventus is a pretty good example. The fans are actually fairly keen on it. They have seen some value. Ultimately, though, it's difficult because you've got the speculative angle. Fans tend to lose money on this stuff, right? And it's only really smart traders that make money. But yeah, I think there's something promising in there. NBA Top Shot already talked about. So Rare and NFL Rivals, the combination of like collectibles and fantasy gaming just seems like such a nice natural fit for Web3 if executed well. And I expect we'll continue to see more iterations of that. You've got the FIFA game coming out soon that's going to be somewhat similar. I'm excited to see that. And I expect that will be the area that kind of onboards the most people in the near future.
And can you share like some of the examples of, you know, projects you've built? You've obviously been in sports for a while, clearly quite passionate about it, but then also have like the Web3 crypto savvy native hat on. And, you know, what have you, some of the projects you've built, and what kind of like fan behavior or value did you see in return for building out those projects?
In Web3 specifically, or in Web2, because they're probably quite different.
Either. I mean, I think Web3 would be interesting, more interesting for us. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll contrast the two. Okay. So what's interesting in Web3 is you've always got this kind of carrot of, if you guys come and do this, you will get an airdrop or reward somewhere down the road, right?
We'll pay you to do something, basically.
Yeah. And that's the key difference, really. And that's a really powerful incentive, and it means you can grow a community fairly quickly. You can, and then if you execute it well, you can turn a percentage of that community into genuine passionate users that come and use your app every day. So yeah, we got to the point where we had hundreds of players playing a Web3 game that we built every single day, and they were giving us too much feedback for us to handle, right?
Like, yeah.
Every day you get new messages of things that could be improved or that should be changed or new ideas, whatever else, and you think you just sort of like don't get that in Web2 in quite the same way, or at least it's a lot harder.
What was that game, Tom, as well? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So that one specifically that I'm referring to is Web3 War, which is a first-person shooter, so it wasn't in the sports space. But then we had a similar effect with the Winner's Circle, which was our horse racing game, which included a prediction game as well. And you sort of just you get this kind of rampant community effect that's really exciting and energizing, but then at the same time you're kind of aware that people are in it for, or a percentage of people are in it for only like to get their tokens. So it's about how you can you build a high quality enough product to actually keep people around and turn more of them into genuine users. And I've experienced that myself. So I remember I started using a protocol on Solana called Drift, which is a perps trading DEX. And I was only using it to farm the airdrop. I had no intention of being a long-term user at all. And I'm still using it like a couple of years later just because I like the product. I think it's quite good. And they added prediction markets recently. So that's quite interesting from a sports point of view as well. And so I kind of know myself, like it can work. But it's also that doesn't mean it's easy. In Web2 world, it's a bit different because you kind of, especially if you're working with a big rights holder, you've already got this captive audience that you're building for. But they're also, especially in football, so kind of reluctant to engage with anything that's commercial. Like this, they're kind of so ready to say, oh, you're just trying to make too much money. You're just trying to monetize me as a fan. Like you don't really care as a fan. So it's like the important bit there is really sort of leading with value for the fan first, because otherwise you're just going to get like one star reviews on like the iStore or whatever it is.
It's really tricky with these crypto projects. Like, I think so much of it, for whatever reason, probably because crypto is primarily like a financial instrument, right? Is that the people that are heavily involved in it, their biggest priority a lot of the time is profit. And it's either you give them initial tokens, they get initial tokens, and either that asset has to perform, so the value goes up, so their holding goes up, or you have to give them more to like keep them at a level where they're happy. And I don't know, I'm seeing projects that are slowly moving away from that and trying to give more utility, like real world value, voting rights, all this kind of stuff. But I fear that is also the case with how Web3 is applied into gaming, into sports. It's all about monetization, and people are mostly involved in these things to make money, either through accrual of value of the token or through people just getting airdrops continuously. And it's something you have to combat, right? Because you can't just guarantee performance constantly. And I don't know how you do that in the best way or guarantee that anyway.
Yeah. I mean, my personal view is with sport, the best place to start is actually with betting and prediction markets, because at least then you're already working with people who are used to speculation and understand that they might be able to lose money. Whereas I think a lot of the anti-crypto sentiment has come from people who had no idea that they like what they were getting themselves into, and were completely kind of hoodwinked basically into something that they were always just going to be losing on the other end of. And I think if you look at Polymarket's success, certainly during the US election, I can really see there being huge potential for a version of Polymarket that's focused around sports betting, but that also takes the Betfair sort of vision of everybody being able to be their own bookie, and actually people being able to be on the other side of that and being able to be, it make it much easier for them to be able to create their own markets and sort of group together to add liquidity to create their own markets. I think that's actually a really interesting concept, and it might be the poly market just evolves and becomes that, or it could be that someone tries to build something specifically for sports prediction markets, and that could be really disruptive if that takes off.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Actually, I hadn't thought quite about like the idea of pulling people together to offer certain kind of markets that aren't available. But that's that. I really like that. And I can also imagine, you know, for like a sports centric version of, say, a poly market, yeah, there being a really interesting kind of community angle as well, like having people almost like copy trading, but for tips and things like that, and having a rewards mechanism baked in there as well, I think would be something to maybe explore. Just going back to the whole, because I guess when we started initially talking about the value proposition of Web3 in general for sports, you spoke a lot about the fan ownership and governance, right, as those kind of two separate but linked aspects potentially. So what do you, if say you had like an ideal all singing all dancing Web3 kind of system, ecosystem, whatever you want to call it, for a sports club of your choosing, like, and you know, technical capabilities we can ignore for now, like let's assume you can do what you want, what do you think would be kind of the most compelling pitch to the individual, like the actual fan? So the fan who's just been a supporter of Spurs or Liverpool their whole life, and then you're going to start talking about Web3 or introducing this kind of system. What do you think for them would be the most compelling pitch in terms of what it's actually going to do for them, like value proposition wise?
So what I want to see is a non-league football team owner completely go all in on blockchain. Okay. So you imagine you're an owner of a non-league football team. If there's any listening, please feel free to contact me because I'll happily work with you on this. Say you've been stuck in the National League or National League South or whatever it is for like a number of seasons, nothing's happening. You make an announcement that you're going all in on blockchain. You're going to be the world's first decentralized football team. And we've seen some experiments with like the Bedford team that the Bitcoin guy owns and
Pete McCormack. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm talking like full on chain, right? So you're going to put you're going to enable, you're going to tokenize club ownership, you're going to enable fans to benefit in the upside commercially. You're going to give full governance rights around like what players you're signing, what formation you're going to play, all that stuff. Obviously, you're going to have to get a manager on board that's comfortable with that. That's going to be challenging, but let's say you do it, right? You're going to have, your tickets are going to turn into NFTs that have highlights of the game that you went to, right? So you can have a cool NFT memento of every game you're going to go. Even if you just went that far, but you could probably move further into like gaming and betting over time, whatever it is. I think if somebody comes out and says that, even the press around saying that would open opportunities for sponsorships with crypto companies that would otherwise be unobtainable. Okay. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling thing where actually you're able to generate significant revenue from those commercial agreements that can then fund the roadmap for the blockchain innovation. And actually, like, it really wouldn't cost that much to get started anyway. Like, there's tons of good projects out there that are desperate actually for like use cases and rights holders to work with. So what better place to start? And that's what I'm desperate to see. Hasn't quite happened yet, but I think it might do. And then I think once larger right holders see the commercial benefit, that's when the penny would start to drop, and maybe we'll see a real explosion of Web3 innovation in sport.
I love that. I think like I was a big football fan when I was younger, not so much anymore. I got, you know, disengaged with it. But having seen the amount of armchair managers like in my family who were just there like, oh no, we should have played this person. I can guarantee that so many of fans would definitely put down like £100 for the year, whatever, to say, okay, I get a vote on every player that plays that game, or one player particularly. And then you can like really give people an incentive where, say, they pay £100 up front and they get one vote per game on the formation or the players or whatever it is. And if they win, there's a little incentive they get back. Maybe they get a pound back or whatever the fee is at the end of the year. If they get a certain ranking, they get a percentage of that. And if you're wrong, well, maybe you lose a point as well. And it kind of comes into the idea of speculation and gambling as well. I really like the polymarket thing you spoke about as well, that the fact that you can bet on anything. I think it would get really weird if it started being applied to sport. Anyone can set up a pool for absolutely anything. You could maybe even like link your, you know, your patch of grass to say, if say a goal is scored on your patch of grass, you win something and you buy the patch of grass. Like, there's just so many opportunities here. I think like it's really hard to do these things in a centralized way. I think you are right that you need to just open it up to the masses and be like, okay, we're decentralized now, go crazy. And let's see what happens. I think there'll be a lot of trolling as well, though. You know, the classic, like, Boaty McBoat face, like, players, random ass players, like, the manager getting put up front or something like that if everything's in the game. So you imagine you'd set a lot of guardrails on this stuff as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. If you play it out, you'd have to war game it a lot because, you're going to get wealthy fans of your rival team buying a load of tokens in order to influence the vote and then like, trying to take you down. But that would all be part of it, right? And it's still money coming in to the club. So, I think it would be an amazing experiment. I'm desperate to see it.
Yeah, I think Web3 could really do with a good narrative like that. And I think sport is the place where narratives are born, right? Like you look at something like a Wimbledon AFC, right? Like how that was risen up from the ashes from grassroots community. I completely agree with the sentiment that I think a grassroots football story around Web3 would be the way to go for sure.
That's why I love sport. Like at the end of the day, people are stupidly passionate about it and like follow it every day, but no one dies. It's just about having fun. It's like you don't have to take it that seriously. Sometimes I think sports do take themselves too seriously and actually they loosened up a bit. We could achieve a lot more, especially when it comes to innovation.
Yeah, for sure. I think maybe sports is the only place where you get people that are more irrational and passionate about stuff than in Web3. But it's a match made in heaven. And Tom, thank you so much. It's been a huge pleasure having you on and learning about what you've been up to and what you think the kind of avenues are for Web3 and sports in the future. And hopefully it won't be the last time we have you on. You know, it'd be great to have you on again in the future. Tom, do you want to just shout out where people can find you? I know you've got your own podcast, right? So if you want to let people know where they can find you in the future or if they want to learn anything more, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. My own podcast is Fan Zone, where me and my friend Joe talk about Web3 sport, though we haven't done one in a while, but there's plenty of old episodes to listen to. You can mainly find me on LinkedIn talking about this kind of stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, Tom. And if you want to find out more about Tom or the podcast, that'll be linked in the description. And all that remains to say is thanks again, Tom, for joining us. It's been awesome. And thank you for listening at home. And you can join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.